Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. ebaymotors.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
I said to you though, Merry Christmas. Jeremy, you know me, the last 10 day stretch, Merry Christmas all round. I get very fired up for the holidays. You know, the decorations are up and everyone's excited. Winter is coming, so to speak. You know, Jeremy?
You're wishing me a Merry Christmas. I'm like, it's 9 days out and like, you got to get everybody in the mood. Like, it's festival. Are you listening to a lot of Christmas music? All right. Like, when do you start your Christmas music listening?
I mean, this won't surprise you, but I'm not really a Christmas music guy.
Really?
I'm a pretty big Christmas movie guy. I don't really enjoy the music very much, unfortunately.
What's your favorite Christmas movie?
Great question. I think Elf is a classic.
Fair.
A Christmas Story is great. It's a Wonderful Life is, I mean, that's like, you know, that's it's cliche, but that's a masterpiece, right? Wonderful film. You know, so that, there's some obvious ones. What about you, Jeremy?
I mean, Die Hard seems cliche. It's a Christmas movie. Home Alone. Home Alone's definitely a Christmas movie as well. I do like Elf. That's a good one.
I feel like you was quite controversial there with your answers, you know. I don't want to cause debate. Yeah, I don't want to cause debate on tonight's show, but try not to bring up Die Hard. I don't want to get into that on the air.
Fair.
No, look, I love Christmas. Wrestling at Christmas is good too. Right.
Winter is coming. Yeah.
Winter is coming. I mean, next week looks fine. We'll get to that obviously on tonight's show. But did you
Cody Christmas? I know you're excited about that.
Were you fired up last night? Where are you at on this whole Broadway thing? Because this is, look, the 60-minute draw is the most controversial topic in professional wrestling history. Not true at all, but I'm gonna say it. And nowadays everyone's scared of it before it even happens. Where was you at on it as it was unfolding in front of our eyes?
Well, if people tuned in to a show we did on youtube.com/Fightful Distraction earlier this week, yeah. Someone who also writes for this website, allegedly, apparently, you know, he kind of hinted that a 60-minute draw might be happening. So I kind of prepared myself for it, you know, right. But even as it was unfolding, I was still engaged the entire time, man. Like it didn't drag at all. As far as did it need to happen, like Hangman could have won in that final minute and it wouldn't have hurt anything, honestly.
Yeah, I was thinking about this a lot. So firstly, do you think it enhanced your enjoyment of the match or hurt it that you kind of knew it was going to go 60?
I thought it was going to hurt it, but as it was playing out, like, it didn't. Right. At all, because it was so good. Like it was so good. And the commercials, they played it out smartly. Like a lot of the commercial break at least two of them. You know, the one where like Hangman's on the outside the entire time getting attended to, and the one after the table dive as well. Like they just did, they did a lot of double down spots during the commercial break. So like you didn't really miss any of the action, and it was picture in picture. But when it was actually live, like it was full bore action. I thought it was good.
Yeah, it was good. I have to say, I think so. As you said perfectly, I kind of referenced this last night. It's like I kind of got the sense that the 60 minutes thing was where they were going. You know, Sean had hinted at, and as soon as I thought about it, I was like, oh, that's what they'll do at Battle of the Belts. They'll run it back, you know. And then when they opened, it was like they're 100% going 60 minutes. And so I was basically set up not to bite on anything until like the last 10 minutes. And I still loved it. I watched it today with my dad, who was like, you know, much less in the loop and wasn't sitting there expecting a brawl by like a fucking nerd. Dude, that might be the best match of the year, man. It's an incredible match. Like, do you know what's amazing about that match? And I was thinking about this a lot earlier. It sounds dumb to say this because it was a 60-minute match. So by definition, it wasn't epic, okay? It was obviously ambitious in terms of the time they went. But it wasn't like... it wasn't ambitious or optimistic in terms of it had all these great sequences and all this stuff that blew your mind and would look great on a GIF. It was just beautiful pro wrestling, you know? Maybe the best wrestler ever at the peak of his powers, in control of a match, leading it as a heel. Opposite, a guy putting in one of the best babyface performances I've seen in years, selling, fighting uphill, you know, peaks and valleys, and just fat. The storytelling was just, it was remarkable, man. Like some of the stuff they did, and like, you know, Brian basically dominating things, always taking it to the mat when he needed to, and then like making certain mistakes, like when he kicked the post, and it was, it sounds dumb not to say it was like a, it was obviously an epic, it was 60 minutes long, but it was just, it was bread and butter, you know? It was such a beautiful match. You could, that kind of match could air, other than a couple of spots, that match could kind of, that could have aired 40 years ago and been a classic. And I mean, to me, that's a compliment. It's timeless, you know?
Jay Blood kind of mentions the same thing here. He says, when the match was over, felt like I watched something that was nearly seamless in the way Savage and Steamboat was. And I was going to mention sort of something similar. Like, it felt very effortless. It did not feel like they were... we kind of knew they were going 60. But it felt so effortless with these guys. It didn't feel like they were like trying to build this epic. And like you said, like it clearly was, it went 60 minutes, but it didn't feel like they were trying to like hammer that home. Like certain people will try to do. Like it went 60, but it was engaging the entire time, man. It was engaging the entire time. Now the kind of, people have the debate on going 60. I think my bigger sort of issue, and it's not even an issue, but a talking point, is like they've done two big Danielson matches now, and two of them have ended in time limit draws. The 30 minutes with Omega and this going 60 minutes. Like, is that a crutch? Should they just beat Danielson? Should they, you know, not book him in matches where he's going to lose if they don't want to lose, if they don't want him to lose after 60 minutes? People sort of want to finish on this stuff. Like, where are you at with them kind of making Danielson Mr. Time Limit Draw?
I like it because I think it suits his skill set and just his whole vibe. I think if you don't like it, that's absolutely fair. I've talked about this a lot recently, Jeremy. I think there's a real problem with every differing opinion being branded bad faith.
Yeah.
There is just the reality that some people are not going to like a 60-minute draw. That's absolutely fine. I have no problem with it, but as you know, Jeremy, I'm a nerd for the time in which that was, you know, in vogue. So it would make sense. I have no problem with it. I will say, though, this was not a purposeless 60-minute draw, right? Because let's be honest about it. How did the first match end? The Arthur Ashe match with Kenny and Brian. Brian had him beat, right? He had him in the submission. And the idea, the story they were trying to capture was that Brian didn't really respect Hangman and just thought if he took him to deep waters, he would drown him. He's, you know, he's a champion wrestler and Hangman really isn't that. He's a one-hit wonder. That was the idea. So to flip it on his head, and then after 60 minutes, Brian had to be saved by the bell. I think some of us in the bubble, frankly, and we've all been guilty of this at different times, I think we have lost sight of why that was in the playbook to begin with, that match. To you and I, Hangman is the champ and the top guy. I think that match did more than those of us in the bubble will ever realize for Hangman as a champion level wrestler. It's one thing to be a feel good story, and I think you and I and everyone that watches AEW closely kind of knew anyway that Hangman was great. This was a complete, like, this solidified Hangman as a top tier professional wrestler in the world. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't think he had the range to pull off a 60 minute match. They're very difficult to do. And look, maybe Brian led the way, but let's be real. This was both parties here were wonderful. I think this kind of made Hangman, and people may scoff at that because, like, he's the champ, and that's fair. Maybe it's just my perspective, but I don't think you can underestimate just how rare this is and how special it felt to people that wasn't like you and I sitting there at minute two going, they're going 16. Because again, I've watched my dad, you know, my dad's been watching this product now for 3-4 months, and he's seen Hangman wrestle like 3 times. He's seen Brian wrestle over and over again, right? And there is definitely a portion of this audience that just thinks, basically that just thinks that Brian is a tier above everyone else. And frankly, they're not wrong. This put Hangman right alongside him as a performer, which I think matters more than people realize. Like, I thought it kind of elevated Hangman. I don't know. Where are you at on that whole part of it?
I'm totally with you because, like, I never knocked Hangman's, like, in-ring ability. I knew he was good. But he's in a company with a lot of very, very good professional wrestlers. The sort of quote-unquote knock on Hangman was that it was a lot of character stuff, right? Like, that's what you got invested in. You got invested in Hangman because the story they were telling with the character, not because he was going out there and having these great matches, even though he was having very good matches during the build up with the Kenny Omega match. And the Omega match was very good because, and look, he's working Kenny Omega. The story was there. Everyone was waiting on that moment, and they nailed that. This, like you said, like, really just solidified him as, like, yeah, this guy can just totally go. Like, there's no doubt about him as a bell-to-bell kind of in-ring guy who can carry that of, like, giving you these great matches that now people sort of have come to expect with the AEW World title. Like, no issues with that after last night. Yeah, maybe Danielson led it. He's, you know, he's the all-time GOAT, in my opinion. But, like, you go 60 minutes, you got to do your part on that. And this was more than Hangman just, like, doing his part and getting carried. He was right there alongside Danielson for the majority of it. So I think it, like, really did a lot to further establish Hangman as, like, that guy that you see carrying this company as that in-ring worker.
I think it's difficult, right? I understand why, especially nowadays, everyone is kind of scared of rematches because, let's be honest, and I'm talking out of turn here, the other place has kind of abused those, right? And you get rematches that are repeats. They aren't, you know, stories that are developing. They're just running matches back to full TV time. I thought this match last night was a really great opportunity to do something singular in the promotion's history, to produce a match that a whole generation will remember as their 60-minute draw. Because believe it or not, folks, not everyone that watches AEW Dynamite has watched Flair's Greatest Hits, okay? There will be a fan in 20 years doing a podcast like this and talks about that night they went 60 minutes. I promise you. It isn't as common as people think, you know, on the mainstream scale. So to be able to do that and then set the stage for a rematch where you can build on it. You know, when they eventually wrestle again, and I think it'll be Battle of the Belts, but they could do it whenever. I'm not locking that in. You could do the complete opposite. You could shock people and trade bombs for 25 minutes and get out of there. Or you can build on this and Brian could go insane. We know Brian previously famously had plans of a 180-minute match, which, sorry to hear that. Good luck. Hope for Hangman's sake that idea has been stricken from the brain. But, you know, I just – sometimes I think we can get lost in the idea of, like, right and wrong in wrestling. And here's what I mean by that, Jeremy, okay? If I just said to you instinctively, before you'd even seen this, Hangman could A, have his first title defense in a draw, or B, he could win 3 matches emphatically in 15 minutes, you probably would say, fairly, have him win the damn matches, right? He just won the belt, make him champ. Yeah. But in reality, it wouldn't have been more impactful if he'd have just defended against, you know, Scorpio Sky or Hobbs or Ricky Starks or, you know, even babyfaces, Darby, King, whoever. This was impactful because they actually kind of had people fearing that he was going to lose the belt. And so a draw here was more valuable than a throwaway title defense that we all knew he was going to win. And that isn't traditional thinking, maybe, but it's very real. I mean, with this audience, we can't forget that audience was into every minute of that match. I mean, they were quiet at times because it's a 60-minute match, but they never lost them, not even for a second, I don't think. And, I mean, the last 5 minutes, they bit on false finishes. They were actually started to bite on them at 20 minutes, which is bonkers because they kept them the whole way. I think sometimes you have to remove your kind of, like, the way you fought beforehand, not you, because we basically agree on this. But, I mean, if you'd have told me before they're going 60 minutes into draw, I'd have been like, oh, that sounds, like, overcomplicated. But I watched the match. And the match removed any of those doubts. I thought it elevated Hangman. And the thing that we need to get into here, and I believe it was the title or it was the thumbnail or it was something. I think you tweeted it. I don't know. This is, I think, yet another tick for Bryan Danielson as the greatest wrestler ever in that argument. And I think it's a very real conversation worth having. But I don't want to move on from this completely yet. When do you think we are getting this rematch, Jeremy? Do you have any read on that?
Battle of the Belts makes sense, but that's only an hour special. So if you're doing that, then and maybe it's just a one match thing. And then, because like if you announce a second match, you're telegraphing that match is going to end, which I think most people are going to expect a conclusion to Hangman and Danielson next time. But I don't think you just want to outright telegraph that. I think you'd just rather do it like an hour and then. I don't know what you do for that second hour. You do an impromptu match or something. They might be able. I don't know if they can hold this off until pay-per-view on Revolution.
Yeah, it's a long time.
It's because that's the beginning of March. Like that's a very long time to try to hold this off. Maybe they do it the first TBS show because at least then you have 2 hours to play with. And so if you announce extra matches like you did last night. With you know, they had 4 matches announced going into it. So you're going to announce extra matches and it'll be okay. Do you think they do like an Iron Man stipulation? I hope they don't do that. I don't really want to see that.
I think what I would do, and we are working on the assumption that Battle of the Belts is indeed 1 hour because we don't know for sure yet, right?
Yeah, I think that is not like fully reported or not like fully announced, but that seems to be what it's going to be.
How would you feel about, and this is the perfect way to separate it from Rampage, to be fair, if it is 1 hour, how would you feel about framing it as just that match? And you basically say, there is no time limit. TNT has given us this TV time for this match. We're going to get straight to the action. We're going to do the entrances to start. We're going to get to the ring. And obviously it wouldn't go to an hour, so you'd get out there in an hour. Because like, look, I would pop for them doing like a really insane sprint in contrast, but I think Brian's probably going to take the sequel far too. You're probably going to you're probably going to go 50, I think, because I've seen him do similar in, 16, 17 years ago, because wrestlers lost forever now. I think that would be a really cool way of making Battle of the Belts like feel like its own commodity just this one time. You know? Like, Rampage has had some big cards. So how do you make Battle of the Belts, if it is 1 hour, feel truly special? Well, just framing it as we have got this time for our world title match. We're pretty epic. And then what you could do is you could do the buy-in on YouTube, give people some nice matches for an hour there, 2 hour slot with the YouTube half, like the way they did with the Suzuki Bryan match, you know?
I think they got to do something else, whether it be YouTube or I assume they're taping something.
They'll tape something if not, yeah.
Yeah, because for the live audience, it ain't just going to be like a 1 hour show.
Right.
Maybe you do like a reserve, like you announce a reserve bout and you're like, you know what, if this doesn't happen, it'll take place on next week's Dynamite, something like that. Like you just have something on reserve that if it does end short, then you can do this extra match out there. Like maybe that's one way to go. The buy-in thing, a buy-in makes sense. Like, I don't know, a post-buy could make sense as well, of like you do matches after the thing, and that's where you kind of go into the reserve of like, oh, okay, this was supposed to be on the post buy, but because the match ended early, now we're gonna put this on the main show type of thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways you could do it, because you could also, if you wanted to, you could frame it the way I said, but then you could actually have the match finish with like 10 minutes left of the broadcast. And like we would with any great sporting event, you could actually give Hangman some interview time. You could have the announcers kind of put a bow on it and be like, that's, you know, one of the great matches. But I don't know. I'm really intrigued by playing with the format. I brought up an example of it, and Jeremy, this will pop you because it's hilarious and dumb, but it's just my example. Remember when the UFC first landed on Fox and they hilariously booked Kane and JDS and it landed in a minute?
Because Kane didn't follow the game plan.
Now, as easy as it is to forget for a range of reasons, you know, because the fight ended in a minute, as you said, didn't follow the game plan. There was an incredible feeling about the way that was framed, right? Like, having like the presentation with the, you know, the panel talking about this one fight.
Yeah.
Man, would it be something. Imagine you had Bret Hart, Arn Anderson, you know, Jake Roberts sitting there with Schiavone building up this match, like this singular match. They have all these big matches, but this one, we just saw these guys go an hour. This is a one-off in AEW history. We have time tonight to settle the score. That really intrigues me. And I get why people would kind of roll their eyes at it because they want a super card, not a super match. But I want to stress again, man, just because we're familiar with this as a move in that, you know, like a thing you can do a Broadway, right? You can do an hour draw. That is not necessarily the case for the wider wrestling audience. And honestly, there is like a generation, maybe two, that has never experienced truly what this is. I think Cena did one. Cena do one with Shawn Michaels? Or like he did like an hour match, maybe not a draw, but an hour match.
Cena and Punk went an hour, didn't they?
I don't know. I forget. But you know, they said it was the longest match in AEW history, obviously, but they said that at like the 40-minute mark. This is not, you know, back in Ring of Honor, man, like Brian got really comfortable doing these long matches. This is really the first look of it. So I think maximizing it's important. I don't disagree if someone said to me, actually, Battle of the Belts is too soon. I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
The issue is, who else is going to wrestle Battle of the Belts? You know, I don't know. Because that's what we talked about on The Grin last Friday, latenightgrin.com, was that what is the match for Hangman? We were assuming he was going to beat Brian. Okay, who's going to wrestle Battle of the Belts? What do you think? Like, it feels like this is the answer to that, to me anyway.
I mean, we tossed out last night or sometime this week. We did too many shows. Briscoe's FTR at Battle of the Belts because it's in North Carolina, and we think they're setting up that next week, that angle. So like that's potential there, and that maybe that's the one where you put that on the post buy type of thing, or that's your reserve match, and then you can still deliver that if Brian Hangman goes short. I'm fine with, like, we don't know what the format is for these TNT specials. That's the thing, is like, we don't know. We know they have these quarterly specials. This is Battle of the Belts. People make assumptions about what you know that actually means, the name of it, of okay, are you gonna do title matches, like all title matches, are you gonna do title versus title match? Like, what are you doing? Does this mean the world champion's facing the TNT champion? People don't exactly know what these quarterly specials mean, what the name is supposed to mean behind it, if anything. I'm fine with them doing anything with the format because we don't know what it is right now. So you can do something different. People have these expectations based on, I guess, like Clash of Champions, and obviously they're going to read into the name and everything. But if Tony Khan just, like, he's Battle of the Belts, like the belt of the AEW world title, and I mean, Danielson didn't have the belt of the fucking the greatest of all time. Like,
yeah,
we're going to present this as just one big fight. You're right about the UFC format. Like, that was always a weird decision for them to do that, because they had, what was the, like, Guida against Pettis was on that show.
It was Guida, right? And Benson, I think.
Benson, yeah, you're right. Yeah, so like that was on there. Like, wait, that's on Facebook. That should probably be on Fox. Right. But they did something different with it, and it wasn't great, especially because of the way the main event ended. But with wrestling, you can obviously do it a little bit different because you ended that match in a minute and 13 seconds.
Right, exactly. You can just, you know, people talk about sport presentation, right? And everyone scoffs at it because, like, they do comedy. And I think people lose the plot with that stuff. Sports style presentation doesn't necessarily mean rounds and, you know, everyone talking about the kind of the majesty of the sport, like Matt Stryker. It can just mean selling matches the way that combat sports sell fights.
Yeah.
Which, like, look, I don't think I'm, like, the other promotion just hasn't done that for a long time. That's fine. That's their choice. AEW has had moments where they've done that brilliantly. Like that last pay-per-view where you had, King and Punk, Hangman and Kenny, that had the vibe as a fan of like one of those stacked UFC cards where you had these great stories overlapping. And this was a chance to really have fun with that. I will say, and this is one thing where I'm kind of cautious, is like, I don't mind not doing it Battle of the Belts, especially if you want to get to Revolution. You do need to give Hangman this win sooner than later. Because if he wrestles people that are far inferior next, like if he was to, and that sounds mean, but it's, you know, it's Bryan Danielson, guys. It could be anyone, they're inferior to him. But you get what I'm saying, right? If he has kind of like placeholder defenses while Bryan goes and has great matches trying to reclaim number one spot, that could backfire somewhat. I actually don't think that's what they're going to do at all. I don't know, man. I really, especially on the rewatch, I was just in awe of how brilliant Bryan Danielson is. And I want to stress again, because this is very important we get this across. I think we've both said it enough times, but it's just one last time. That is not a slight on Hangman, who was just remarkable last night. Like, just a brilliant babyface that's connected with people so seamlessly, and they really do love him. To the point where Bryan was getting real heat last night because they wanted Hangman to win so much. He's the ace of the promotion. He's the guy you can hang your hat on for the next, you know, 5 years and up. However, that man, Bryan Danielson, is something else. I mean, he didn't even look blown up.
He was doing jumping jacks. And when he, I said it like, when he gets in the ring and he just like flexes, poses, does all this shit. Like, I just cackle. He's having so much fun just being a dick. You notice he came out of the face tunnel, though, Joseph. Still a baby face. He's being a dick, okay. But he did come out of the baby face tunnel. But he's having so much fun with this shit. Real quick, I'll get to Danielson in a second because, you know, I'll talk about Danielson all day. The ending of the match is great, but like when Danielson's got him down, he's like, I'm going to kick his fucking head in. And he starts kicking his fucking head in. And then when Hangman gets him, he's like, now I'm going to kick his fucking head in.
Yes. Taz was great on that because that part of the match was when he started being like, oh, you want some cowboy shit? And he was like kicking him. And Taz goes, I think Danielson may have lost his composure a little bit. Because, you know, the idea was at the start of the match, you had the hothead in Hangman getting frustrated, right? And by the end of the match, Danielson was so befuddled as to why he couldn't finish it that he was getting really pissed off. And they were just, you know, I mean, it can't be overstated. Again, I'm circling back to Hangman here because you just, when you talk about the match, more and more stuff comes to mind. Hangman doing the land on his feet deal from the back suplex. Yeah. That was at 55 minutes in.
That was insane.
He's, you know, both of them are incredible. But yes, I honestly sometimes watch Bryan Danielson. And before I go any further, I haven't watched as much wrestling as some. I've watched more than others. Everyone has their own history books, right? Like, I can't tell you he's the best wrestler ever, knowing that I've watched every wrestler. I haven't, plain and simple. However, there are times I've watched him, especially in this AEW run, and I have legitimately been like, not only do I think he's better than anyone else I've ever seen, he is brilliant in a way that may be like completely separate from me. He may be in like his own tier at this point for me. You look at his run in AEW, man. Look at the matches he has racked up since September. Like, dudes, it's so lazy to sit here and be like, Bryan Danielson's good. But I think it's worth us sitting here and talking about how great this man is because he's so brilliant that you can almost take for granted he's genius. He's like, he's on his own level, man. He's something else, Jeremy. Go somewhere with this so I don't just sit here and talk about how great he is for the next half an hour. Go ahead.
We mentioned it a few weeks ago of we think Omega is the wrestler of the year.
Yeah, change my mind. Then,
and then we're like, man, Danielson's got the John Silver match and the Hangman match. Yeah. Like, he's going to go for it. And like the Silver match, he went for it. The Hangman match, he was like, I'm not going to go for it. I'm just going to fucking win it. Like I'm going to take it. And I'm kind of with you. He might wrestle next week as well and just really solidify it even more.
Yes.
He is literally like built different when it comes to this shit because he does all the small stuff that you love. He makes everything look brutal. He can wrestle a variety of styles that, you know, not everybody can do. it's just good, man.
He's like, just different, man. He is.
Like, it's tough to just come up with the superlatives for him. But, like, it's not even, you know, people are like, oh, Danielson, he doesn't have, well, they're not on him, like, charisma or whatever. Like, you that guy, like, you watch him in the ring, the crowd is, you mentioned the crowd earlier, like, it's an hour-long match. Like, yeah, they came down at certain points. Like, what do you expect? Like, the people were there and with him. With Hangman the entire hour, and he's so good at like just milking stuff. We watched the Kenta match in ROH, and where like he fucks up and he's like, I don't fuck up. You are champion. Like, he's so good in those environments, man, of just like playing and reacting to the crowd and everything. That's a dude who just like he goes out there and like he actually does like listen and gets it and can modify and do what he needs to do to take the crowd on the ride that they didn't need to be taken on. There's not, you know, the knock on Flair is like, oh, you've seen one match, you've seen them all and things like that. It's like Danielson's going to do something different every single time. And he's going to just play with the crowd and whatever they're reacting to, whatever they're doing, he's going to make sure he gets the most out of that. It's similar. We've told the story on here before, but like the Tanahashi AJ story that we both love. Yeah. And when AJ's got him in the calf crusher and Tanahashi's like reaching for the ropes and everything. And AJ's like, grab the rope, like, what are you doing? Grab it. And he's like, oh, and then he finally grabs it and like he hears the crowd rise and get the pop. He's like, oh man, like I didn't know what he was doing, but then I got it. Like, that's every Bryan Danielson match, man.
He's just, there's a great tweet. Dax Harwood said this before on, I believe it was a tweet. He was like, wrestling fans have really convinced themselves that charisma is just like wearing colorful clothes and like Brother, if you don't think Bryan Danielson's charismatic, I mean, like, in the ad break when Hangman was getting the, you know, which was like the one moment where the match kind of, they give themselves a breather, right? When he took, when he had the head gantry. And Bryan is standing in the middle of the ring and he's like, he's talking shit. He's grinning wide. He's doing jumping jacks. And he goes like this to do the yes thing. Like, he gets in position and the place come up and then he does the middle fingers around the building. And it's like, all right, he's, and here's the other thing too. And this is really important. Look at the range of matches in terms of time that he's had that you could consider at least good. Because that dude had matches with Cesaro on WWE TV that was like 4 minutes long and were like bangers, you know, like these tiny little TV matches he had. He had some great TV matches with Jey Uso. The Roman Reigns matches were, you know, I mean, the match and the Triple Threat of Mania were great. And then you look at AEW, okay? He has had really nice, efficient TV matches. John Silver, Bobby Fish, there's some other examples. He has had a bruising, kind of like Clash of the Titans style match with Eddie Kingston. I think went 16 minutes. Remember that match? Remember how red Bryan's chest was in that one? Where he kind of shocked me in that I thought he was going to control the match and beat Eddie up, and he sold the whole time. It was incredible. You have the 30-minute epic with Kenny Omega that lived up to everyone's expectations and more. Beautiful match. You have this. You have the Miro match that you loved. Especially, I remember you talking about how brilliant it was, and I agree with you. He's
dude, Joseph. Yes. He wrestled fucking Suzuki this year.
Yes, Suzuki. I mean,
the Suzuki he wrestled match, Suzuki.
I came on this show and was like, well, I'm not sure this is going to live up to the hype because of the circumstance. And they give you like the perfect greatest hits match where he's so brilliant that Suzuki felt the need to mat wrestle again, which he hasn't done since like 2012 because he doesn't need to anymore. They were on the mat training. It's just. He's honestly, and it's so difficult because I think Kenny Omega, if someone says to me Kenny Omega is the wrestler of the year, firstly, not only do I not think they're wrong, I think in my brain may actually agree with that, you know, especially when you consider there was someone in our Discord that laid it out perfectly. I think it was Dave. Like, there is other factors with wrestler of the year, right? Like, you can't, there's sort of, there's narrative elements, there's what they meant to the business. Kenny was champ in a range of places, you know, a lot of stuff. But it is, each time I watch Bryan, I can't help myself, you know? And like, I think Eddie Kingston's in the argument. But then each time I watch Bryan, right or wrong, he leaves me with very little doubt. And I'll be honest, I thought this match was going to be great because I think Bryan Danielson is the greatest wrestler ever. And I think Hangman Page is damn good too. It was unlike anything I could have envisioned. You know, I thought they were going to have a nice physical 20, 25 minute match. And of course, this is the guy Bryan does the hour with. Of course. He wouldn't do it with, like, again, it sounds like I'm slaying Hangman, but if he'd have done it with Omega, it's like, yeah, that makes sense. That's kind of, if you look at Kenny's track record and his, that makes a lot of sense. Hangman's never been a long singles match guy. No. So, of course, Brian would go, that's what we're going to do. We're going to do it with Hangman. 60 minutes, you know, and by the end of it, he's going to have me beat. It's just absolutely extraordinary. And I'm so, so thankful. In all seriousness, we all want wrestlers to make whatever decisions they want to make that's best for them and their families. But God, am I thankful we're getting this run, because you and I believed he was the GOAT anyway. He's doing us an awful favor here with this run, brother.
I was saying it during WWE, and you know, a lot of people probably didn't get why, because his WWE stuff just doesn't stand out the way like his ROH stuff certainly did, even though he would have some great matches in WWE. This like 4 month run here is really showing, like, yeah, this is why I was saying this stuff while he was even in WWE, because we all kind of knew what he was capable of if you watched him in ROH. And Danielson had these doubts too. Like he's admitted this. He's like, yeah, I sleepwalked through the WWE stuff. He's like, man, I watch AEW. It's like, I just don't know if I can do that anymore. Like, we know ROH Bryan Danielson could do it. He's young. He's whatever. Of course he can. He's like, he's 40 now. Like, I don't know if I can just like do that stuff. More Moxie's like, you're Brian fucking Danielson. Of course you can do that shit. And he comes here and yes, he can do that shit still.
Yeah, I mean, that's hilarious. But him doubting himself is adorable.
I mean, all the best doubt themselves. Real quick, I want to get to James Edward Smith. And then I'm looking up Hangman Page, like his longest matches before the Danielson match. James Edward Smith says, Kenny's promos as a belt collector still make me say it's his this year. Brian almost stole it, but Kenny, maybe it's a tie. Should Wrestler of the Year be a time limit draw?
That'd be fitting. Maybe. Yeah, maybe. There you go. Like, PWI just has, like, the picture of a bell ringing. No, yeah, look, I mean, either way, I think it's a fine answer. I tweeted the other night, Jeremy. I'm not sure if you saw this, but I watched the NXT 2.0 program live.
Mm-hmm.
And world-famous grappler Roddy Strong had another great match on NXT. And I tweeted after, I was like, I need you all to realize that he's been an excellent professional wrestler for much of the last 18 years. I want everyone to also appreciate that Bryan Danielson's timeline not only goes back further, the peaks are higher, the lows are higher. I mean, legitimately, the only difference is...
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you had an extra hour in your day, what is the first thing that you would do? Read a book, take a nap, play some video games, do something for a friend, volunteer. A lot of us spend our lives wishing that we had more time. But the question is, time for what? And if it was unlimited, how would you go about using it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important for you and to make it a priority. And therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. Therapy is so valuable. It's gotten me through some tough times, really helped me reflect on things that are important, specifically with BetterHelp. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be the convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. This is so beneficial when you've got that crammed schedule and you can't even imagine finding that extra hour. You can do it all from home. Fill out a brief questionnaire, get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Fightful today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Fightful. It's so flexible and it can help you find that social sweet spot with BetterHelp. That's BetterHelp.com/Fightful.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Obviously, Danielson has the gap where he was forced into retirement, right?
Yeah.
But outside of that, he's honestly had a case of being the best wrestler in the world for, I would say, try to think about this. If you said active, he's had 15 years. I would say at least 12 of them. He's had a real case of being the best wrestler in the world. And his standard is such that you can kind of take that for granted, right? But, like, you mentioned the Kenta match. He's deep in his run there in Ring of Honor. Because there are a lot of people that I respect that prefer, like, 04 before being champ Brian to the one that was the, you know, the Ring of Honor champ. So the idea that we're now 15 years removed from that, absurd. Makes no sense. And he don't even look like he's close to slowing down. So
he said the next 3 years, like 3 years. He's given himself another 3 years of this kind of level. And like it, we mentioned, like he had doubts coming into AEW. Then he's there and he's like, oh yeah, I definitely got at least 3 years. Like he doesn't have the doubts. He believes he has these 3 years. After these 3 years, maybe the doubts creep in, and he can probably still go for another 5 years at this
level. Yeah, I mean, and that's the big question is, can you avoid... I think we both agree Hangman should have a real reign first.
Yeah.
But can you avoid Brian eventually getting that belt? I'll be honest, I don't know. I don't think he cares, but I'm just, you know...
You're pretty... real quickly. So Hangman's kind of longest singles matches. Omega went 25 minutes. The Jericho match went 26 minutes. The first All Out 2019. And then like, that's kind of it. And then he went 25 minutes with Jay White in 2018. Otherwise, like a lot of just, you know, tight 12 to 17 minute kind of stuff, and a lot even less than that. So he's gone over 20 minutes like three times.
Lest we forget, Jeremy, before we circle back to the topic, because this is worth talking about. Hangman is not an AEW guy in the sense that people that watch Ring of Honor saw him on their promo, their product for years, right? He was there for quite a bit in Ring of Honor, I want to say, right? But the reason he's the first ace to me of AEW and why he's so important is because this is his first run as the top guy.
Yeah.
In fact, a top guy, which he just laid out perfectly those match times. He was not a guy that had like main event matches in Ring of Honor. In fact, he was often dismissed as kind of a bland project on the in the mid card on the underneath. So it's really important when people talk about who's the ace of a promotion, it's really important to not lose sight of the fact that there's more to it than just being the best wrestler or the best promo or having the best look. There's other factors. The reason Hangman is such a great ace for AEW, and you know, is one they need to really build and make sure is central, is because this is his first chance to really be that guy. And it's happening on AEW TV. That matters. But with that being said, I throw it back to you. The difficult question, which is, how do you keep the belt off this dude forever, right?
You've booked the CM Punk angle, which I absolutely love. Punk and then getting to Kingston. But man, it feels very tough to deny Bryan Danielson of getting this belt. I think if you're going to beat Danielson, like Hangman should be the one to do it. And they're going to do the rematch. So either Danielson wins the title then or Hangman beats him. I'm with you that like they got to do this soon. Like, I don't think you can delay this Hangman and Danielson rematch for too long. Because if you do that, then like what do you do? Danielson just like beats people on his way to the top. Like it looks like Hangman's almost like avoiding him. Unless you were going to do like Danielson avoiding him. But
maybe you could do that. It doesn't work perfectly, but you could do that.
Yeah. Like you can't do Hangman avoiding him because Hangman's story based on this is like I had you beat at 60 and then the bell rang. So unless Danielson is gonna avoid and be like doubt and be like, you didn't have me beat and all this stuff, and he wants to just wrestle other people and do that. That's one way to do it. But even for Danielson, that doesn't feel right. Like for Danielson, based on how this match ended, it would be like, you didn't have, like, I was going to kick out of your move. Like, you know, it, give him some respect and everything, but still be Bryan Danielson of like, you know, you hit me with your best stuff. You couldn't put me away. I was going to kick out. I was going to beat you type of
thing. Yeah.
And that's why I think you've got to do this like sooner rather than later. As far as like putting the belt on Danielson, I don't think he cares. He clearly doesn't need it. People are going to care about his matches regardless. But man, a Bryan Danielson like world title run, whether it's babyface or heel, it just it feels like it needs to happen pretty soon. And I don't know how you get out of that, because people love Hangman, and I'm not saying you got to cut Hangman's run short or anything, but it feels like by the end of next year, Danielson's got to hold that belt at some point.
Yeah, and this is kind of what we talked about last night regarding Kevin Steen. It's like, the way AEW does their title reigns, you know, look at the brief history we've had so far. They're not looking to, you know, throw this belt around kind of every which way. They want these, you know, these reigns to be worthwhile. And I think minimum, Hangman has to hold it through to Double or Nothing. And that's 6 months. That to me is like, that's a good point to go, okay, whatever you get after that, I'm open to. Before that, I feel like he needs to be holding. But that's just me personally. I'm sticking to my guns on Punk. The real question is, when you look ahead and you go, okay, it's time to put the belt on Adam Cole, or it's time to put the belt on MJF, it's going to take a really brave booker at that point in time, if Brian's still where he's at now, to be like, yeah, definitely Adam Cole or MJF's above him in that. And again, he may be at a point in his career where he doesn't want that belt. And in that case, Tony Khan sleep easier at night and figure it out. But as a fan of the product, I can't sit here and tell you that I'm not fascinated by Brian being the champion in a way that I'm simply not for those alternatives. That is not a criticism of Adam Cole or MJF. That is the reality of being on the same roster as the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson. You know, so I think it's a real topic. I think Punk, especially because Punk turning heel is what I always sort of associate with him as champ, I think there's something to be said for him having that belt, and it's more important than Bryan.
Really?
Yeah, I think Punk as champ, business-wise, could be a real big thing. I really do. I've always believed that, right? And like, especially if you put a hot act around him. I'm not sure who that would be, but him as like a center of a heel group really fascinates me. And you'd have this dynamic of guys like AEW protectors almost try to get the belt back. Like, because if he turned heel, to me, he would be erasing all of that stuff he said about how much fun he's having, you know?
Yeah.
Danielson is great that he can just kind of be this guy forever and wrestle great matches. The issue with me is when I go beyond Punk, it's like, okay, then am I really, you know, am I really going to an MJF or whoever's next? I don't want to just keep naming MJF or Adam Cole, but like, you get what I'm saying, right?
It's difficult. Punk heel champion, there's definitely money in that. If you're doing Danielson as champion, because right now he's essentially a heel. He came out of the face tunnel, but he's a heel. He's getting he's getting the heel reactions. Yeah. And like, if he beats Hangman, he's going to be a heel. Like, are you putting the belt on Danielson as a heel or a babyface?
It's so hard because he's like, he's such a great babyface that he literally changed how WWE booked babyfaces. Yeah. He was so good, he broke their system and they convinced themselves they were the ones that did it. But as a heel, he's like full. That's him at his greatest form, right? Yeah. Like, it was the same in Ring of Honor, it's the same now. If I was to look ahead, all right, this fantasy book, son. The way I pitched to you before was Punk screws Hangman and takes advantage of his kind of trust, you know, low blow, whatever, steals the belt. And my opinion was I would then, 6 months later at Full Gear, is the name of I, you know, that's where I'm my kind of timeline's at. Full Gear is where I would use Eddie as the first short reign as champ. Yeah. Eddie beating Punk completes Eddie's arc with a rematch of a bloody brawl from a year prior. And Eddie also gives you an opportunity to break the format. And Eddie could be champ for 3 weeks, a month, right? He could drop it straight at Winter is Coming. So to me, the conversation has always been, who in my mind would win it from Eddie? Would it be MJF? Would it be Adam Cole? Or would it be, finally, heel Bryan Danielson beating the dude that he said always didn't work hard anyway? And, you know, then you would have... Because the question is, like, who's next on the babyface side? And in that sense, you could easily say, well, Bryan. Like, if you said to me instead, Jeremy, forget Kingston, you do Brian taking the belt from Punk, I can't argue with that. That's the biggest match they can make. Story-wise, I think my pitch is more interesting, but I'm also obviously fucking biased, right? There is the one thing I will say, and we don't talk about him on this show because, frankly, wrestling is nowhere near as important as his real life, and we love him and we're rooting for him, is John Moxley. Let me tell you, folks, like, even when that dude's back and he's ready to go, there's a lot to be said for how important he is in this whole story. Because yeah. Mox getting that belt back as the first two-time champ, for me personally, and I'm not trying to get ahead of myself again, his life's much more important, but you get what I'm saying, right? That would be a fucking moment. So there's some options there. What do you think?
I think coming out of this Hangman thing, you keep Danielson a heel. So I'm gonna take your idea and I'm gonna kind of add a little to it there. So you keep Danielson a heel. We all think Kenny's coming back as a babyface. Because he's going to feud with the Elite. Cole's going to be a heel. The Bucks might even turn babyface with Kenny because Undisputed Era. O'Reilly's going to be there next week and Fish is there. So you have that there. You keep Danielson a heel. You do the heel turn with Punk. You do what with Punk? You do the Danielson-Punk tag team that they've been wanting to do. Like with Punk as a champion. You do the Kingston win that you talked about, but this is how you thread to Danielson and Kingston because Danielson and Punk have been teaming. Danielson just basically comes out and, you know, they've probably worked tag matches at this point. Kingston and let's say Moxley.
That'd be incredible, wouldn't it?
Can you imagine? Kingston, Moxley against Punk and Danielson. Yes. So you do that match at Full Gear and then winter is coming. You do Danielson against Kingston. Danielson can win it there. As a heel. So, because I think at some point we're getting that Danielson and Punk tag team. I don't know how long the run's going to be, but we're going to get that. Like they want to do that. They've been wanting to do it for years. We're going to get that at some point. So I think that's what I would try to, how I would add on to what your story is, which I think is already amazing.
And then you would have this dynamic where clearly Punk would feel a certain way about Brian as champ, right?
Yeah.
You'd have a lot to do. You know, eventually, you ideally would end up in a spot where by mid-2023, Brian has handed it on to your next babyface, maybe a John Moxley, we don't know, right? Could be a noob, it could be a guy like Jungle Boy. You can't predict the future. We're 2 years ahead now. But then you could end up in a situation where Brian and Punk have a blood feud after a year of kind of being friendly and teaming. There's so much you can do, and this is why, and again, this is really, like, I don't want to come across a certain way. But this is what I was talking about last night, in that we all need to have these kind of, even if you just do it in your head or you talk to a friend or you do a podcast, it's whatever you do. Try and map out this belt. Try and map out these main event players. Try and figure out how their progression is going to do. If you want to, you don't have to. Obviously, you can just watch the show like a normal person. If you want to be a nerd like this and realize something that's dawned on me in recent months with these additions, which is like, this roster's kind of full. And that doesn't mean you don't add someone of Swerve's caliber or of Keith Lee's caliber or of Athena's caliber, especially the woman's side. There's definitely, you know, I think more space. But look at what we've just sat here and try and figure out from the world title scene, and look how many names we didn't bring up. You know, we got to 2023 without mentioning Ricky Starks, who we love. God, I mean, we both think the world of him. Adam Cole, MJF, Sammy Guevara, Darby Allin. Like, there's a lot here.
All of those guys you mentioned are... like they're all relatively young, especially compared to Punk and Dancy. Yeah. Like you've got to maximize what you have with Punk and Danielson, because they ain't going to be around forever. Danielson said 3 years. I don't know how long Punk, but he's obviously up there in age. These Coles, Darby's, MJF's and stuff, they got many, many more years. They don't need the belt right now. That's not something you be like, oh yeah, you got to put the belt on MJF for the next 2 years. MJF has got another 5 years to win this belt. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not as concerned with these guys because I know they're going to be fine. Like right now with the talent you have, you got to maximize. I think you got to maximize Kenny because I think Kenny is like, you just did what you needed to do with him. And I don't know if he's going to get that belt again, but he'll obviously be in a high profile position, but you've got to maximize Brian and you've got to maximize Punk and probably even like Kingston, because Kingston how old is Moxley? Moxley's kind of up there as well.
Mid-30s, I'd say. Yeah, I know that he's younger than King, right? Because King's 40, so.
Yeah.
So yeah, but you're right. You're absolutely right.
You got to maximize these guys for the next few years with that world title. And then you can worry about your 20-year-olds who will have their time. Right.
And it's going to be challenging. There, look, yeah. I want to be honest, folks. There are going to be some really talented dudes that fall for the cracks on this thing. There just is. That's not a knock on backstage morale or any of that stuff. It just, that's the reality of, like, you have to maximize certain assets. And where I look at where Punk and Brian are at right now, especially Brian, like, as though Punk's not been fucking awesome, you know, like, both of them, when you look at where they're at right now, I think you're spot on. You have to, you know, if you're going to bring them in, you got to make the most of it. Now, Kenny's interesting because I've said this to you before. In my mind, Punk's big pay-per-view defense before he dropped it to an Eddie would be against Kenny. And I did that in a stadium. You know, Punk and Kenny Omega, babyface Kenny Omega, I think would be magnificent. I think Kenny, when he comes back, is going to be, I don't want to be say like he'll have exhibition matches because that sounds kind of lesser than what I'm imagining. I imagine him as like the big match guy that you kind of save for the big marquee blockbusters. Maybe each year he has one conflict and feud, but mostly he's the guy that people just want to see that dude wrestle and want to celebrate him, and you book him accordingly. I mean, you could even do like, you could easily, with him as a babyface, just like, yeah, we're going to do him and Okada at pay-per-view. Enjoy it, you know, do one press conference angle or something. Like, I think people have booed Kenny for long enough and the whole audience absolutely loves him, and you just treat him as like the big match guy, best bout machine, a superstar, a legend, all of that stuff. Because I think that's how the audience sees him, and you embrace that. I think
so too, but Kenny wants to tell stories, man.
Like, telling stories, yeah.
Yeah, he still wants to do that. And I just don't know if he's just going to be like, all right, I'm just going to be kind of big match Kenny Omega and just work kind of super shows. I think he's going to still be that same guy. Like, I'm going to go out there sort of every week and still, like, maybe he, for the television stuff and whatnot, he tones it down a little bit, but I think that he's going to still want to go out there and try to tell these kind of long-term stories and really put himself in harm's way with a lot of this stuff. But like, maybe the big match Kenny is kind of the story of, like, you know, he's lost a step. He lost the Hangman. He's beat up. He's a little bit broken down compared to what he used to be. The first story they got to wrap up is obviously the Elite. We know where they're.
And that's a big one. Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah. After that, then you can kind of start playing. Okay, where does Kenny fit in? But I think that's going to be, like, let's assume he comes back in February. They ain't wrapping that up at a Revolution or anything. That thing's probably not going. That thing's probably going to, like, All Out or something. So I think Kenny, for the majority of the year, is going to be doing stuff with a Undisputed Elite.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that would be one of the, like I mentioned, maybe if you have one big conflict or feud a year, him and Cole is obviously one of the big feuds. And it's difficult because he would have just come back, and that's why you're right, you'd have to delay it some. Kenny Omega's kind of, his role there would be, when Adam Cole leaves this feud with you, and you guys have multiple major main event matches, we need the audience to be desperate for Adam Cole to be the world champion, even as a heel, right? Kenny Omega, I've said this before, I think there's a lot of things Adam Cole does better than Kenny Omega. I don't think he has the presence of Omega. I don't think he has the feel of a star like Omega does, who's traveled the world and been a main event guy. I think the idea would be when you do that feud, you want Cole to get that, you know, kind of rubbed off on him. And that's, Kenny can do that in his sleep, right? So yeah. I don't have any doubts about that. Now, a couple of things quickly. We got a couple of teasers of debuts last night, right? And we both believe O'Reilly's, if he's not the present, the surprise gift, he's coming real soon. How do you, fantasy book a little bit more of me, what do you think is going to happen with this Undisputed Era deal? Like, are we going to have him as a five-man faction? Are we going to split? What do you think is going to happen here?
I think the start, it's going to be a five-man faction. And then Cole is obviously like the middleman of all of this. And I think that's just how they play it until Kenny comes back. And then you do Elite and Undisputed Era. I think that's the way they'll slow play it a little bit, and because I don't know when Kenny's coming back. Like they've said February, they might hold him off until after Revolution, because, you know, well, if you're gonna bring him back in February, you don't want to rush anything for Revolution. We all assume O'Reilly's coming in next week, and I think they just do a five-man faction thing, and they're all like buddy buddy at first, and then you start to see the little bit of, you know, things kind of unraveling as Adam Cole's attention gets kind of pulled in two ways here.
Who would be the heel or the babyface in that? Would Kenny come back and make the Bucks babyfaces? Would they have already been turned on and Kenny makes a save? Is that what you kind of thing?
I think you got to go babyface Bucks because we think Kenny's going babyface. So the best way.
See, I would kind of prefer that Kenny turn babyface by like going back with Hangman and righting his wrong in that regard.
Okay.
And I don't know if you can do that. You could do it that way because the Bucks kind of accepted what happened at the end of Full Gear. But like, but I have this vision in my head of...
Okay, well, go ahead.
No, I see this idea of like the Bucks versus Kenny and Hangman 2 after like 2 years removed from the original. And it fascinates me, that as an idea. That's the only thing.
Okay, so you're keeping Bucks heels then?
I think so, yeah. But I also get your, like, I also get your take, not just in the way you said it, but in addition, like, who's left for them to wrestle on the babyface side, you know? Like, they've been heels now. They wrestle every team in the division.
See, the Bucks are better as heels. They've been great during this run. But if Kenny's going back with Hangman, like, the Bucks kind of, they did the nod of approval.
That's fair.
So, like, why would they have, like, any type of issue with that? Like, if anything, Kenny would have an issue with them, and this is how you keep the Bucks. This is how you kind of keep Kenny heel, is like, oh, you guys, you gave him. But I think this is how you can kind of link all four of these guys back together in some way. I think Kenny's coming back babyface, and I think the Bucks are going babyface as well. I mean, as far as other non-surprises, last night the lights went out and the Fiend Bray Wyatt did not appear. I was let me tell you, Joseph, when I the tissues were out, I had to be very consoled that, you know, the Fiend did not show up to attack FTR and MJF and everybody. Just very sad that it was just Sting. We got Sting last year. Where was the Fiend?
Wrestling may be subjective, but at any point in your life you see Sting and you're like, fuck, I was hoping for Wyndham. I'm sorry to hear that. I'm very concerned about what's waiting for me when this farm is removed from there. I have my own take on one of those now, but I don't have it by hand. I'm going to get it for the post show. Tune in for that. If you're a big fan of Bray Wyatt, bless you, I understand it's like you're kind of waiting. And because of the way he is, he's not going to tell you anything until something happens, which is, you know, I get it's frustrating, but like for me personally... there was no point in my life I'm going to see Sting and be like, God damn it. I wish it was Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
I thought it was obvious it was Sting because they were.
Me too.
They shot the angle last Friday. I don't know. I can't dunk on it too much because legitimately multiple people you and I are both either friends with or respect thought it was going to be like someone else. But I am slightly confused as to why people thought it was going to be someone else. Of course it was Sting. Come on, guys. And then you should have immediately been like, oh, CM Punk trios. I do love the new thing where they go, like, Tony Khan's going to make an announcement. So, like, he kind of, like, saw the future. Like, he knew. Like, he spoke to Sting and was like, hey, man, like, I think FTR are going to go out. So, make sure. Like, I'm going to turn the lights out for you. So, make sure you get in the ring quick. We can give you, you know. And then, hopefully, Punk comes out and helps you. Because I'm hoping to run a six-way or a trios match for next, you know, for Christmas next week. Dude. Bless him, man. He's a great booker. He sees the future, you know.
Well, that's good. You know, you got to have foresight on these things. There was supposed to be an Owen announcement last night, wasn't there? Like, I've thought that's what they were setting up when they're like, oh, Tony Khan has a big announcement. And then it was just that match, which, look, I'm looking forward to this match. But like you said, it's like, yeah, Tony Khan just saw the future on that. Like, it felt like there was supposed to be some type of Owen announcement. And I don't know if they ran out of time or what happened. But
so the Confirmed Shoot, who's a great broadcast journalist, you should all follow at Confirmed Shoot. He informed me that they've recently changed the rules in Canada in terms of attendance. They're back to 50% capacity. And we kind of, you know, not exactly investigative journalism, but we kind of get the sense that maybe the announcement was our first show in Canada that will host the Owen. Because let's be honest, that feels like, if they're not, you just wait, right? Like, you might as well do it in Canada and wait. So that's probably part of it, or they may have just forgot, which is equally likely. So, yeah, I don't know. I think I get why people expected a debut. I think when you get a 60-minute draw on TV featuring Bryan Danielson, you should probably not be too upset that Wyndham didn't show up.
No, there was way too much. We talked about it on the pre-show. Just way too much talk about, like, oh, what debut they have. They had Sting last year. What are they doing this year? Like, just enjoy what they're putting in front of you with this roster and these matches. Yeah. And everything, like, you don't got to wait for this next big pop and everything.
You're gonna run out.
Like Tony Khan's feeding into it. Like all these interviews, like I got my eye on this guy. Wait till what we do here. And like they got O'Reilly coming. They might have other guys coming and whatnot. So like they're gonna have these pops, but like don't get caught up in just waiting for it, speculating for it. You don't have to do that.
And I said, this one's for all pals. And O'Neill starts to feed from the jaws of victory with the pipe gun and the chubby cheese. Distraction. Hey! Podcast. Pure filth. Wins and losses, don't mean shit. So what's Joseph Grinch as I do his bit? Distraction. Hey! Roll up.
Hello, welcome everyone to Robert O'Neill's Corner 3.
History Channel, bang!
Hello, Robert O'Neill.
Joker, Jeremy, how you doing? It's good to see you guys.
It's good to see you as well, buddy. Tremendous background.
Well, I'm just hanging out here in my living room. You know, I'm in the Christmas spirit today, so I got my sweater, I got my cocoa here.
Oh my god.
Yeah. I'm just, I'm excited, man. You know, I don't know if I'm going to be here next week because it's travel day for me. So I want to do my Christmas stuff this week.
This is the greatest moment in Distraction history, I think.
This really is.
Because it isn't quite working at the degree you intend because your microphone is like beaming through the, but you know.
It's fine. Just go with it.
You get what you get, I suppose. Okay.
You ready? Are you ready, O'Neill?
Yeah, well, you know, let me just set this up real quick because I am probably going to need most of the 3 minutes. You know, last night, a lot of people watched Bryan Danielson and Adam Page. About 3 or 4 times as many people watched the Young Rock Christmas special. So today we're going to talk about that because that's really what people are here for. And Young Rock has been such a focal point of this segment. So we're going to go back to our roots here.
Here we go, everybody. Robert O'Neill's Corner 3.
History Channel, bang!
Okay, so we open in a workshop where there's kids, they're like being worked by this mean guy. They're told they won't get any presents this year, but someone breaks down the door and it's Dwayne The Rock Johnson. He's playing Big Tim because he's Tiny Tim, but he's all grown up. They need to get out of here because they got to go save Christmas. You know, someone has kidnapped Mrs. Claus and stole Santa's sleigh and taken the city of New Orleans hostage. But then we cut, it's just a movie. We don't have to worry. But Dwayne's not happy with one of the child actors and he wants to replace him with Kevin Hart. He's got to nail the part or the movie's going to fail. So he goes over and he starts, you know, talking to the kid and be like, hey, you know, Christmas Carol, that's a real thing. It happened to me. So go back in time to 1982 Hawaii, where he's in the audience of a wrestling match with his mom and grandma and Andre the Giant and Randy Savage and all of them are there having a real special Christmas match. They go back to the house and, you know, Young Rock's excited to open his presents. He's getting a Cabbage Patch Kid. So he's really excited, going to bed early. So he gets up in the middle of the night and goes out to, investigate what's going on with his presence, and he sees himself from the future. Future Rock tells Young Rock that tomorrow's going to be the worst day of his life, actually. Young Rock is confused about, you know, what's going on, so he goes and looks at his present. It's actually a knockoff Cabbage Patch Kid, and Future Rock says it's only going to get worse from there, and they're going on an adventure. So let me go to Pennsylvania in the 1987. Future Rock and Young Rock are in a mall. They all got jobs at the mall for the holidays, trying to make ends meet. Rock's at Elf and Rocky Johnson's Santa. Rocky's trying to draw more attention to Santa, so he kind of rips the sleeves off the suit and does a Santa with muscles thing. Kind of embarrasses Dwayne a little bit, doesn't want to be an elf, doesn't want his friends to see him, so he runs into his ex-girlfriend Karen with her new boyfriend, and you know, they're kind of looking down on him, being like, hey, you're just an elf, you know, who cares, man? And so he gets in a fight with this guy, hits him with an inflatable candy cane and kind of like spears him through the Santa's workshop thing and just causes a whole mess. And so, you know, 1987 Rock and 1982 Rock both leave. They go up the escalator in the mall, and they're like, oh, that was probably our worst Christmas. But then we see Miami Hurricanes Rock, and he's like, just wait, it gets worse. So then we're in Miami. You know, he finishes the workout, and he calls home to talk to his parents, says, you know, he can't come home for Christmas. He's got to train for the Fiesta Bowl. But actually, he doesn't want to be around them because, you know, things aren't going well with them right now. They're going through some issues, and he just doesn't want to deal with it. So, you know, he hangs up with them, and we see Ed Orgeron again. And he's like, hey, you know, if you're all alone for Christmas, why don't you come spend it with me and my mom? So they go there, and, you know, it's not what he's used to. He's used to these kind of Hawaiian big Christmases, and it's just two people. They're just kind of hanging out, making gumbo. And, you know, Coach O's mom has to go to the bathroom, so Dwayne's like, oh, you know, I'll stir the gumbo. And he puts salt in it. You can't do that. You know, she made it the way she made it for a reason. So she has, like, this episode, and she's going to the hospital. because she's not doing well.
That has been Robert O'Neill's corner three. History to the man!
That man's blown sky high.
O'Neill, do some jumping jacks like Danielson.
He's so out of breath. He was talking so quickly. He was going, bro, don't worry about it. If we missed out on the end of that, no one would have given you shit for it. Try and take your breath for yourself, man. Good Lord. That was incredible. What a way to follow a 60-minute Broadway, brother. Amazing.
Ryan Sullivan left us super chat, said for how much you guys just made me laugh. Thanks, man.
Yeah, I was proud of that cold open. I was too, but I have to say, in fact, that comment could very well be about just Bob's visual. Hey guys, Merry Christmas. Oh my goodness.
I didn't finish, by the way. There's still more, but there's I'm more. Not going to do it. Yeah.
Bob, man.
Yeah, I think about 800.
I didn't know if there was more because, like, you just stopped for the final 2 seconds.
Yeah, well, because that was the first time I looked at the clock because I'm like, oh, I wonder what time we're at. And then I just like, it's not worth finishing. I mean, so how it ends is, like, they learn the meaning of Christmas and this kid's like, oh, you're right. And then they make the movie.
800 words, did you say?
Yeah, it's a 22-minute show.
Oh, my goodness, Bob. What is happening over there at headquarters, man?
You know, I wanted to get back to my roots because, you know, it's an important segment. It's an important time of year. And, you know, just wanted to spread the message to everyone.
Bob, lest we forget the lore of you wearing that particular Christmas jumper on today. You know, feels like it was a choice, right?
Yeah, well, it's the only one I have. I should probably get a new one. But,
hey, Bob.
It's on purpose.
Throw up the Undisputed Era thing.
I can't do it. Like,
what do you mean you can't do it?
I can't do it with my fingers, man. I've tried. Like, it just doesn't.
It's just
your fingers don't cooperate.
Wait, hang on. Now I'm confused. It's a U and an E, right?
Yeah, but you gotta do them at the same time. It's like
you gotta do them at the same time.
What the fuck? What's going on here?
It's tough, man.
All right, fine.
How's it go? It goes like that, right?
Yeah.
Like that.
There you go.
There you go.
That's right. Now you're right.
Like
yeah.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, there you go, folks. That is undisputed, or whatever they say.
Frank says, pals, my business is on fire figuratively, so I'm not able to watch live. Popping in a Christmas sweater does make me feel better, though. All hell.
I'm sorry. I'm just popping at the idea of Bob watching NXT TakeOver, looking at his hands, being like,
how do you do this?
And then he finally gets one hand right, and he's like, oh, shit, man. What am I? He's just sweating bullets while he watches Undisputed Era matches.
Oh, man. O'Neill, are you doing the post show with us?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
I don't know what we're doing on the post show. Maybe we'll talk about something that isn't Brian Danielson.
Yeah. Maybe not, though. Maybe
not. Let's keep talking about Brian Danielson.
Yeah.
All right. O'Neill, do some plugs and things like that.
Yeah, you follow me on Twitter at RobertO'Neill31.
Don't do that.
You join us for the post show. Go back and watch some other stuff we've done this week. I was on the Ring of Honor show as usual. They did a Dynamite preview yesterday, which I mean, I guess Dynamite's already happened, but you can go back and watch that anyway. Who cares?
We don't really talk about Dynamite, to be fair. But
yeah, we don't. We talked about the Fed dying most of the time with Alex McCarthy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all I have to plug.
Wow. Okay, Bill. That's all?
Yeah.
I feel like there's more, but he's a coward.
Yeah. Yeah, I was about to say, don't you do like other stuff? Aren't you going to make other appearances tonight on a different platform?
He's not actually.
No, oh, tonight really? I'm going to Spider-Man, but tomorrow night after Rampage, we go latenightgrin.com and see us the last Friday evening show of 2021. Because we're moving to Wednesdays the next 2 weeks.
I have to do a hard sell for this, okay?
Okay.
We have 4 more to go. We got really close last month. We're even closer now. We need 4 patrons, and Bob will sing the New Age Outlaws theme song. 4. Yes. $1 to sign up. You can cancel if you think it sucks at the end of the month. Just get us over 200 so Bob sings. I don't even care if you cancel after, frankly. I just want to see that. I'm so tired of waiting to make him sing this damn thing. For some reason, he himself decided he was going to sing this. I didn't even ask him to. So $1, latenightgreen.com. There's a lot of content there with a lot of dumb wrestling fans, including a couple that are on screen right now. So, yeah, that's join us over there. That's the main thing to promote on my end too. And, yeah, the post show. Where we talk about the stuff that's too real for the main show, bro. I'm going to get my own Sting figurine, and we're going to, you know, compare Stings.
Fair. Guys, we'll be on the post show, youtube.com/FightfulDistraction over there. We're close to 1,200, 12,000. I don't know. Something with a 12 in it. 12K, whatever that is. 12K subscribers. Everyone go over and subscribe and say nice things about us. And, you know, we got cool content over there sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes I talk to wrestlers, man. You guys want to see me talk to more wrestlers? If you subscribe, I'll do that. All right. Thanks everybody for hanging out with us today. We appreciate it. YouTube.com/FightfulDistraction. Go to Fightful Select. Sean broke the, can we give Patreon subs like Twitch? You cannot, unfortunately, because we have tried that and you cannot do that, which very unfortunate. But you can go to twitch.tv/FightfulGaming and gift a bunch of subs over there, because I get paid off that too. So, you know, whatever gets me some money. That's all. That's what I care about. It's Christmas season, everyone. I got kids. I need some cash. Cash for all these kids. Got Christmas presents to buy, Joseph.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas, everyone. See you on the post show. YouTube.com/FightfulDistraction.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.